Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, how about it? Hope everybody enjoyed their Labor Day weekend and all of the week one festivities, but we are off and rolling on a Tuesday, September 2nd, 2025. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I'm your host, Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside executive producer of the show, Connor Dunning on X at C929. Connor, how's it going, brother?
What's up, man?
Oh, man. Nothing much. Nothing much. We have a lot to get to, though.
A lot
to discuss, including Alabama under Kalen DeBoer. I think the question we have to get to the bottom of, why isn't it working out? There's a lot of reasons that you could come up with as to why it's not working out, but I have one thought in mind that I cannot get rid of. I will tell you it here in just a moment. We have 3 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We'll talk about all the ball, all the festivities, recap what we saw, talk a little bit of Memphis football. It was a fun weekend for me, by the way, of course. Got Myers out to a game. He had to leave a little bit early. It was a little bit hot out there for him. He was sweating a little bit. Had a few extra naps on Saturday. But, it was all in good fun. Got to see my former team. That was great. We released the Tigers. Got to see Paxton. My guy Regis Ball showed up a little bit late. Rolled in with about three minutes to go onto the field. But it was good to sort of rehash it with those guys. And good to get the recognition from the University of Memphis. I thought they did a really good job, put some events out there for us, took care of us, gave us some tickets, and that was great. Family was in town. But Tigers win 45-10. I will talk about it. I don't know how much I can take away from it. We do have an injury that we're going to have to follow for the first few weeks. Greg DeRosier Jr. goes down. But there's a couple of backs that look pretty good in that game. Frank Peasant, transfer from Middle Tennessee. And, of course, Sutton Smith back
looked
from injury.
Good.
He
yeah.
looked
great,
about as quick and fast and athletic and explosive as he ever has. I didn't really see much of a fall off from Sutton.
New QB, thoughts?
Pretty good. The offense did and functioned the way I thought it would, and it functioned at a high level in the way that I thought it would. 7.1 yards per carry, most quarterback rushing yards in a game, I believe, since 2011. So it's kind of it showed us early what their game plan is going to be and how they're going to run this offense. It's going to look different, but it could be as explosive as it always has been under Tim Kramsey and under Ryan Silverfield, even with Seth Hennigan the last couple of years. As far as guests are concerned, we'll have 4:30 Harold Grader. He will join. Not able to join on Monday, but I can't miss an opportunity to talk with Harold during the college football season. That would be stupid of me. But he's the associate executive director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl, and we'll talk all the ball that you could possibly imagine. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins will join the show. Daily Memphian columnist, also host of the Jeff Calkins Show from 9 to 11 right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Then 6 o'clock per normal on a Tuesday, we bring on Christian Fowler, and we have a lot to talk about. We'll talk about week one, but he's a Cowboys fan, and last time that we all convened, you know, what was the big topic, Connor? Slipping my mind right now.
Whether or not Micah Parsons was going to play for the Cowboys.
Yeah, so Micah Parsons is now a Packer. I want to see what Christian has to say. And something tells me the fan in him will have some level of spin, right? Like some type of spin saying, they weren't going to win with him. They're not going to win without him. Might as well plan for other things down the road. I feel like that may
he
be
part
of his thing.
He was sleeping on the sidelines, Gabe.
Yeah, yeah. He was being a bad teammate. They have to plan for the future. Blitz will be at 6:30. Trip around the NFL at 5:30. I have to open in one spot, and one spot only, though. Alabama goes down 31-17 in Doak Campbell Stadium to Florida State. 31-17. And there are so many things to point out as to why that game went the way it did. But I will say, going into it, I had no inkling in my mind that that game could go the way it did. Because I don't even think 31-17 tells the full story. I don't think that game was ever that close. I never got the sense that Alabama was going to come back, take a lead, and win the game. There was a point where they're down by 7, could have gotten a stop, could have gotten off the field, but they didn't do that. Florida State goes down, scores a touchdown, and the game was over for all intents and purposes. But that game was completely dominated by Florida State. Now, some stats for you. Alabama has lost 3 of their last 4 under Kalen DeBoer. They have lost 4 games that are against unranked opponents and 14 that Kalen DeBoer has coached. Nick Saban lost four games to unranked opponents. You know how many games it took?
His whole career?
235. also, worth mentioning, in the AP poll today, which we will expound on a little bit later in the Blitz, Alabama's 21st. Last time Alabama was below 20 in the AP poll was, get this, 2008. In 2008, the last time Alabama was in the 20s, below 20 in the AP poll, the number one song was Disturbia by Rihanna, absolute bop. Still here to this day, great song. Tropic Thunder was number one in the box office. Ryan Williams, their star receiver, who out with a concussion, couldn't really get the ball to him, didn't really work for him on Saturday. You know how old he was at that time? 1.
Oh, no.
He was one year old.
No.
George W. Bush was still the president. And then who was coaching USC in Florida? Pete Carroll was at USC. Urban Meyer was in Florida. So Alabama has not seen this level of, I guess, quote-unquote misery since 2008. And just watching that game, it went the opposite of how I thought it was going to go. Alabama has what I would consider the most talented offensive line, probably top 3 most talented offensive line in college football right now. Their front 7, you could put them in a top 10 with most talented. But they got absolutely dominated by a Florida State offensive line who is completely unheralded coming into the season, and a Florida State defensive line that has 1 300-pounder in the 2 deep. Gus Malzahn, it was like old times calling offense against Alabama. Just completely throwing them for a loop. They didn't know where to be, how to be there. I thought Tommy Castellanos was pretty phenomenal in this game, using his legs when he needed to throw the ball. 9 for 12, 152 yards, touchdown. I thought he was great there. But Gus Malzahn did a number on that Alabama defense. But the thing that just I can't get over is watching Alabama struggle in the trenches, and then also what showed up on film a whole lot was a lack of effort. Guys jogging off the field, jogging across the field, not really giving their all. Bray Hubbard just got caught time and time again. Their strong safety, a guy who came into the year as a potential all-SEC guy by the end, just jogging all over the field. And that didn't even tell the whole story with him. He played horribly. Couldn't make tackles. Over-pursued, under-pursued constantly. Wasn't good when he was asked to cover guys. But once upon a time with Alabama, they're up 17-3 in an SEC title game, and Ronnie Harrison, their safety at the time, is fist-fighting his teammate because he's so frustrated with the way things are going. They're up 17-3 in the SEC title game. Another example of this under Nick Saban was A.J. McCarron and our guy from town, Barrett Jones, playing center in 2012 national championship game against Notre Dame. They're up 42-14, and they're pushing and shoving each other in the fourth quarter when they're just trying to salt the game away because they're so frustrated with the way things were going. I don't see that fight. I don't see that edge. And I don't see teams respecting Alabama being threatened or scared of Alabama before the game under Kalen DeBoer. There's just not that same level of power and edge that they have always had. And I think ultimately the question sort of comes down to why? Like, why has this not worked out? Now, I think the obvious answer for a lot of people was, okay, Nick Saban recruited a lot of guys. Kalen DeBoer comes in. He's not Nick Saban. It was always going to be hard for him to follow him up. There's a lot of pressure on him. Wasn't quite ready for it. All of that. But I have one thought in my mind that just cannot, it won't escape my mind. And I think Kalen DeBoer's a good to great coach. What he did at Washington, phenomenal. What he and Ryan Grubb did for Michael Penix all those years, phenomenal. Made a national championship at Washington. Had Indiana in the top 15, top 10 for a lot of the year with Michael Penix. I think what it comes down to at Alabama is fit. He's not from this part of the country. Has never coached in this part of the country. And to go from Nick Saban, who was lifetime defensive coach, DB guy, in your face, hold you accountable. That's the type of coach he was to Kalen DeBoer. Different style that can still work, yes, but more loose, offensive-minded, high-powered, vertical passing game. Defense can do what the defense needs to do, but that's not the focus. I just feel like the clash of styles through this first year in a game has been the biggest difference as to why Alabama has fallen off the way they have. And I can't get that to escape me. I can't get it to escape me. Now, there's some ways that Kalen DeBoer can get back and show that he can be successful at Alabama. But it's going to require recruiting the type of guys he needs for his program. I don't think he quite has that, especially the quarterback position. Maybe Keelan Russell can be that guy who's waiting in the wings, five-star guy. They feel very high, you know, he's got high upside. They feel good about him. But Ty Simpson doesn't seem to be the guy that can run his offense at the best of abilities. They have some good wide receivers, but I don't know if the vertical threat and how they sort of use them is quite there yet. The offensive line, sure, they're very talented, but I think they're more of a rugged style. Look at Caden Proctor, 6'5", 335 pounds. He can run block very, very well, but in pass protection, didn't really hold up all that well at left tackle, even though he's considered to be a top five, top 10 NFL draft pick going into next year. It's a rugged style of offensive line, good for what Saban tried to do, where he can run it down your throat, attack with the run game, make things happen like that, but not great for pass protection when you have a guy dropping back 45 times a game. So there's some ways that Kalen DeBoer can find his way at Alabama, but right now it just feels like a misfire in regards to fit in the early going.
Yeah, I think it comes down to culture. It's as simple as that. You know, it's social media is full of stories about Alabama under DeBoer now, and some of them you have to take with a grain of salt, but I think that some of them are probably true. Like, there are Alabama fans who are at the same hotel that the Alabama football team was in, and one of them was a high-level booster, and they said under Saban, these guys, after a certain time, you wouldn't hear a peep from their rooms. You wouldn't even see them. They were asleep. They were getting ready for the game. He said this new team, They're out and about until 1 a.m. They're getting DoorDash. They have girls coming to the room. They're going to other people's rooms. It's loud. It's rambunctious. It's just a different culture. And, I mean, Johnny Manziel was on with Shannon Sharp, and I think that he put it pretty simply. There's just no fear factor anymore when you're going and playing Alabama. I think that those Saban teams struck the fear of God.
They won
into a
games
lot of people.
Before the kickoff.
Yeah, he says you would see them on the schedule and you would be scared about it. This new version of Alabama, I don't think is striking the fear into anybody. I mean, just look at how Tommy Castellanos was talking all offseason. And
he proved it to be true. He said Nick Saban can't save them, and it was true.
9 of 14, 152, and ran on him for 78 yards and a tutty. Not a bad game from Tommy, but it's that the culture of Alabama just feels so different. And it is an unfortunate thing to have to try to follow somebody like Nick Saban, who you and I talked about it when he retired. I think he's the greatest football coach of all time.
Yes.
NFL, college football, any level. I think Nick Saban's the greatest coach of all time. And the difficulty in transition that you're seeing at Alabama, I think just goes, is further proof of him being the greatest. Because it wasn't just his on-the-field culture coaching. It was the culture he created around that football team. Like you said, there are clips going around of his teams being up by 30, screaming at each other on the sidelines.
42-14 in the Natty.
There's one where they're up like 17-0, and two DBs
in
are
the
SEC
going
title
at each
other.
Game, and it's they're fist fighting on the sideline, yeah, which I don't want to see fist fights,
no.
But it shows a level of competition
right.
That I don't think is there right now at Alabama.
Like, could you imagine somebody jogging while a guy's running in front of him?
Bray Hubbard would probably be benched for the rest of the year after his performance.
He'd be walking back to the team facility. There's no way.
He would be benched completely for the rest of the year until he proved otherwise.
And Saban put it perfectly. You pointed it out. Saban said it after the game. This game was won in the trenches, and that's why he's disappointed. And if you're Alabama, that's probably why you need to be a little bit worried, because if you got pushed around in the trenches by a team like Florida State, no offense to Florida State, but they're not supposed to be this yet. They're supposed to be. It's supposed to be a build-back year for Florida State, and they were able to push around Alabama the entire football game. And I watched this game from start to finish. Not for a single second did I think Alabama was going to win this game. Not for one.
Well, and maybe also, at the beginning when they scored first, but then after that, it went downhill.
Some of Ty Simpson's decision-making, too, was very odd. He would have nobody in front of him. He could run for a first down. He would try to make a difficult throw instead, and that would be concerning. So, Alabama might be able to bounce back after this. It is crazy that they haven't been under 500 since 2006. That's absolutely insane. They might be able to bounce back from this, but there are certainly some warning flags firing up. You said they've lost three of the last four?
Three of the last four.
Ooh, man.
Oklahoma, bowl game against Michigan, and then this one. Three of the last four.
Yikes.
Warning flags are up.
And all three
and
of those
honestly,
opponents aren't
I
up
think,
to Alabama
I'll
standard
say this.
Right now.
It's not just warning flags. I think this is full-on alarm time.
Yeah.
Like, this is alarming for a program that has been at the peak and pinnacle of college football for all these years. For people that have been watching, you've been wondering, when's the downfall of Alabama going to happen? And it has not happened. They've never fallen off until now. When they switch coaches, Saban's no longer there, doesn't have his finger on the pulse of that program. Kalen DeBoer takes over. It's just, it is alarming how quickly this has disintegrated and just does not look in any way, shape, or form like Alabama football.
No. And I think that these tweets are a little bit silly, but at the same time, there's some truth within them. Just when people are saying this is the offices of DeBoer versus the office of Saban, one of them feels like an Apple store and very, you know, modern, and the other one felt like a football coach's office. And there was there is something about culture. There is something about aura. There is that does matter.
100%.
And having a coach on
no
the sideline
doubt.
That strikes fear into the other team, no matter what's going on, matters. It does matter. Having a coach
it's
that
just,
you don't want to disappoint if, that has
if
that,
you,
that,
if you
that
put
get
one
in your
word,
hotel room by
word,
11.
One word. You just said it.
Aura.
Not having a don't have a coach that you don't like. They did not want to disappoint Nick Saban. It doesn't feel the same. Probably they don't want to disappoint Kalen DeBoer, but it's not the same level of threat as disappointing Nick Saban. There's a level of accountability to that, to holding yourself accountable for player accountability that Kalen DeBoer just doesn't have. And for a while here, I have been trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, saying, okay, it's just a different style. Everybody does it their way. He can figure it out on his own. I never thought he was ever going to live up to Nick Saban level. No one's going to be able to do that. I don't know if that'll ever be matched, the run that he had. But now I'm starting to look at it and say, okay, maybe this style at Alabama in the SEC with everything that they have and everything they've stood for all this time, maybe it just won't work. That's where I've come to. I've been trying to give him a benefit of the doubt, just say, okay, it's different style. Don't push the alarm. Don't freak out. But now I've gotten to full freak out mode when it comes to Alabama.
I got two more questions for you when it comes to Alabama. One, how much do you think NIL has changed the playing field that Alabama's
dealing with? I think other people can
catch
up. But that does not mean by any stretch of the imagination Alabama should be losing out on recruits, because they don't.
Right.
My last check, I think they're still top five in a recruiting class. They still can go into the portal and get just about everybody they want. They have multiple guys making over $1 million. Yes, it has changed because there's other people that can fork over that type of money, right? That may not even be a blue blood that they were competing with in the past, like Texas Tech, for example. Like, there's other schools that can catch up to the amount of money they have. But that should not be some massive excuse. Nick Saban, the last couple of years of his career, had to deal with NIL. Didn't seem to be some massive inhibiting factor. Still in the college football playoff every year, making it to the national semifinals. In 2023 against Michigan, if it weren't for a bad play call down in the tight red zone, they probably would have won a national championship. They lost, what, 21-20, or a very close game to Michigan. So that conversation, if Nick Saban could get over it with all of the experience the old way that he had, I feel like a guy that has the new age mindset of Kalen DeBoer should be able to thrive in this era with the amount of money that Alabama and the amount of resources that Alabama has at their disposal.
Other question, do you feel like it was ultimately a mistake for them to not go with a Saban disciple?
That's tough, because which Saban disciple are we talking about? Tell me who, and maybe I could give you a decent answer. Because Kirby Smart was elsewhere already, winning national championships when this hire was made. Can't get him. Tell me who. Sark was elsewhere.
Right.
Like, who?
I don't know.
Who was the Saban? I saw that out there, and I understand the thinking, right? To keep that same mindset, keep that same edge in the building. But who is that guy? Right? Like, who was the Saban disciple that you would trust to run that program the same way or similarly to Nick Saban? Because I think when this hire was made for Kalen DeBoer, you look at it, the guy was, what, 116-13 as a college head coach. The guy had won a conference title at Fresno State, then won a conference title and got to a national championship game at Washington. Like, I don't like the looking back at it as some bad hire because you didn't look in-house. Because who in-house was going to take over that job and do a better job than Kalen DeBoer as we sit here today? I think that's revisionist history, but I get the line of thinking that people have about it, if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
Yes. I think that the perfect hire would have been Dan Lanning, I think. But
he was
somewhere else.
He was elsewhere, and he seems to be very comfortable in his shoes.
Butch Jones was available.
Another guy, Mario Cristobal, was there for some time. He was elsewhere.
Will Muschamp.
Like, we can sit here in 2025, 2 years after the hiring was made,
right,
and say, well, they should have gone with the Saban disciple. But at that time, they hired the best possible coach on the market and paid him an unfathomable amount of money to take over there. So it's like, I feel like those conversations are a bit, obviously too little too late, but a bit revisionist in nature.
I think that's fair.
Also, LSU handled business against Clemson. Brian Kelly gets off the schneid. They had lost LSU, no matter who the coach was, 5 straight openers. They finally win one, 17-10 over Clemson. And this outcome actually surprised me for the most part. It really did. Because looking at Clemson, that defensive line's great. You wondered about LSU's defense. How were they going to hold up? I knew they would take a step in the right direction under Blake Baker, but how many steps in the right direction would they take? I thought Garrett Nussmeier was very solid, especially in the second half. He finished 28 for 38, 230, 1 touchdown. They ran the ball okay. Not great, but okay. Caden Durham had 74 yards and a touchdown. But I think really what this LSU team proved to us is this defense can carry them throughout SEC play. This defense can really help them get over the top and be a college football playoff and potential national championship contender. Holding that experienced offense with better weapons than Clemson has had in a long time, with a quarterback that's now 4 years into this thing in Cade Klubnik, to 10 points and none in the second half after making adjustments, the Blake Baker hire has paid off, and it feels like LSU put themselves with that week one win into national championship talks, real national championship talks. I was very impressed with the outcome of that game.
I think that Garrett Nussmeier looked great, and he's still, I think, my pick for the Heisman going into the season, and I think that he showed out in that game, and I can't lie, it was a very fun weekend for me. Memphis won, Tennessee won, Joey Aguilar looked great.
Yep.
Dabo lost, Alabama lost.
Texas lost.
Perfect.
Texas lost.
Texas,
how about that?
Lose. Yes, they
now,
did.
Now, here's where I was right, overwhelmingly right. I was wrong about Alabama-Florida State. I was the first to admit that. But here's where I was right, and you were right, and this show has been right this entire time. Arch Manning looked like a kid who has not started a game in an environment like that. Simply put, Arch Manning is a very talented quarterback, and I think that he'll be fine. But it's insane to me how quickly we have gone from Arch Manning is the favorite to win Heisman to Arch Manning's a complete bust. I saw it coming, but it's insane to me how quickly this flip-flopped.
I can't believe
a complete 180.
That goes, a freshman struggled at Ohio State.
He
for
goes
his first
17
game ever.
For 30, 170, one touchdown, one INT. And to be honest with you, the thing that really bothered me about his performance, it wasn't strictly the drag route to Ryan Wingo that he probably could have taken for a touchdown on third down at the end of that game when they're down by 7, because he sort of sidearmed it, flipped it out there.
Yeah, bad throw.
It's the fact that I think people are blaming Sark, going after Sark for his play calling. I don't think his tight red zone play calling when they turned the ball over on downs down in the tight red zone was great, but he's not good. He's not a good red zone play caller.
No.
But here's the thing. He schemed guys open all day for Arch.
Sure.
All day.
He missed guys.
Including the second play of the game. It was a nice play action look, flood concept. He throws the ball short by 10 yards. 10 yards. Skips it in there. And then, of course, you have the Ryan Wingo thing. And I look back at that game, and there were 5 just easy layup misses from Arch Manning. And I don't think anyone thought going into that game that he'd have that many, even in that environment. That's the thing that does bother me and scare me for the rest of the year. You have to hit those layups if you're going to be the Texas quarterback, if you're going to be a guy who's going to put your team in the running for a national title.
He straight up missed a lot of throws, important throws. It was interesting, though. I do think that he looked better late in the game.
Sure.
When Sark sped it up. When he sped it up and he started actually kind of letting him throw downfield a little bit more, I almost thought that Sark was protecting him a little bit too much in a way, and I do wonder if that messed with his head a little bit. But at the end of the day, he was missing throws that you cannot miss if you want to be in conversations that Arch was in. Now, when you talk about Sark in the red zone, his play calling was awful.
Yes.
Just awful. Like, I don't understand.
Can I remind you of the semifinal game last year against Ohio State in the tight red zone?
And he did the same thing.
Yeah.
Oh, they're never going to expect it again. Listen, if you have a freshman, basically a first-year starting quarterback, and you are at Ohio State with the mammoth of a defensive line that they have, and they've been pushing you around most of the game, you know what you shouldn't do? Have that quarterback run directly in the middle of that defensive line, thinking, oh, we're going to break through. Just, it was, I can't, the moment they lined up, I was like, he's going to try a tush push, isn't he? And he didn't move. Arch didn't move.
I personally think Sark called a good game outside of that tight red zone.
I think in the fourth quarter, Sark was calling a great game, and Arch just simply missed
and
throws.
Can I be real with you, too?
His first half
I think what we need to start doing from a coaching perspective is taking points when we have them.
Yes.
Kick field goals.
Yes.
I know that analytics get in people's brains, and, oh, you have this a 60% chance if you score a touchdown here of winning, but you only have a 45% chance of winning if you kick a field goal here. There was 2 opportunities where they had a chance to kick a field goal. They didn't take them. Could you imagine if that game was 14-13 in that final drive?
Would have been a lot different.
As opposed to 14-7? Playing for a field goal to win as opposed to playing for a touchdown to tie, that changes mindsets completely. So I think a lot of coaches in week one took that same approach as Sark, but I think we need to get back to a little bit of old school – thinking.
Take
of
the points.
Take the points when they're there.
Now, good news for Texas. Their defense looked great.
Yeah. I think this did nothing. Even Arch stinking in the first half and missing throws the way he did late in the game, it did nothing for me to sort of take me off the idea that Texas can win a national title.
Because it was interesting. Arch was not very good overall. But there were moments where you were like, oh, there it is.
Yes, yes.
There it is.
I think Arch is going to grow throughout this season. He's now been in an environment like that, raucous,
probably the hardest game he'll play of the year.
And I think that'll suit him well going into SEC play and through the rest of the schedule. So, like, there's silver linings to this whole thing. Having a performance like that, having to deal with that loss, have it on your resume for the rest of the season, I think that's a good thing, because I think a good example of this is looking back at last year with Ohio State. Final game of the year, of the regular season, they lose to Michigan. And what they do after that? Feels like they kind of rallied together. Nick Saban has said it. He thinks it's the best thing that happened to Ohio State last year, losing to Michigan final game of the year. Get into the playoff, rattle off four straight wins, win a national title. Because of that edge they had and that understanding they had that they didn't want that to happen again. So I think if you're trying to look at silver linings, or I guess a positive spin to this thing, I don't know if it gets much harder for Texas the rest of the way than what they had to deal with week one. And for Arch Manning as well. Now let's go ahead and grab a break on that note, and we will talk about all this and get the takes of the Associate Executive Director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl, Harold Grader, on the other side. Make sure you stick around.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
That 92.9 FM ESPN. Back in and rolling right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. So we didn't have a show on Monday because of Labor Day. So Tuesday is Harold Grader's day this week. Harold Grader's the Associate Executive Director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl on X at Harold Grader. Harold, how was your extended weekend?
Gabe, great weekend. Great to see you and yes. Your teammates from 2014 at the game on Saturday. You guys got to hit the big button and release the Tigers, and it was fun to see you guys and see how you interacted, and obviously great to see Paxton Lynch back in Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium.
It feels like it was yesterday, but I see all my teammates with 4- and 5-year-olds, all married, but proud of those guys, honestly.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Good fathers, good husbands, and that's what I expect from those guys. It takes a certain type of individual to do what we did in 2014, and I'm glad to see it still showing through.
Yeah, you know, and as a Tiger fan, Tiger alum, that's all we want and can ask and expect from the athletes like you that come through, and, you know, that's a big part of it. Yeah. Obviously, when you're there, winning is – number one goal, but you know, you hear coaches talk about developing young men.
Sure.
And you guys are great examples of that. So kudos and congratulations to all you guys.
Yeah, we did get to hit the big button.
Yeah.
Even though the big button didn't exactly press, but we did release the Tigers using that button. It was a good time, though. It really was fun, and it was cool to just reminisce for a little bit. A lot of stories told. A lot of stories told. And I'm sure going into the future, a lot more stories told. And that will be remembered.
Indeed.
Yeah, but a good win for the Tigers.
Good win for the Tigers.
Any real complaints from Saturday? I think it's easier to point out what went wrong because most everything seemed to go right.
No, I don't think there are any really big complaints there. Obviously, coming out of the shoot, there's always things that you can work on this week going into week two. That's just the kind of the normal progression of a football team, right? No, one, you got out of there with the win, only one significant injury, and Greg DeRozio is day-to-day, according to the coach. So nothing major there, it seems. And again, you learn about your team. Quarterback played well. It's kind of what we expected. And now you go on the road to Georgia State, a team that you can't take lightly being on the road. And an interesting story there, they have a new quarterback, T.J. Finley, who's now at his sixth stop. And it'll be interesting to see if he plays. And, I mean, who knows? I mean, they didn't do much against Ole Miss. So do they throw him out there against the Tigers?
How did he transfer and get in when the semester has started most everywhere?
I think it is the new Brave World.
I guess so, yeah. Do we make exceptions now? Did we write in exceptions to the school bylaws to make sure we can get get football players in? Greg DeRozier Jr., you mentioned, will be day-to-day. But, you know, Sutton Smith comes back from the ACL injury.
Yes. Great
looked
story.
Looked as explosive as ever. Looked phenomenal. And then I do think what is nice while DeRozier is out is Frank Pezant came over from Middle Tennessee State. Hasn't really been discussed through camp, but six-year senior. And I thought he looked pretty explosive and had some game when he got in there.
The run game, really impressive, over 230 yards for the team. Talking about Sutton Smith, what a great story.
Yeah.
Yeah, you admire that guy and you're happy for him. Had 9 carries, 60 yards, the 35-yard touchdown run. So you're happy for him. The quarterback, he did exactly what we thought he would do. Not just throwing it, running it, which is even a bigger piece to that offense that the Tigers haven't had because of the quarterbacks that they've had in the past. So with a new element there that we've been hearing about. So, again, a good start, good enough crowd. Tiger fans, get out there, support this football team. So now you take it on the road and you learn even more about your team when you go on the road.
Yep. All right, now to me – the final score that surprised me the most. And there was a lot of surprising sort of outcomes. Whether you thought Texas was going to win, they obviously didn't. We'll talk about that in a second. Whether you thought maybe Clemson was going to win, they didn't win. LSU handled business. But the most surprising to me, Alabama, number 8 in the country, goes on the road to Doak Campbell to play Florida State. Florida State this offseason brings in Gus Malzahn at OC. They bring in Tommy Castellanos from BC to play quarterback. They win 31-17. And you know, Harold, I'll say this. I don't even think that final score is indicative of how the game went. It was even further than that because at one point they're up 24-7. It just was never close. Alabama could get nothing going offensively. Now, we're going to conversate about everything that went wrong for Alabama. Trust and believe that. But what to you stuck out the most about this performance, or really lack thereof, when it came to the performance?
I would say the thing that sticks out for me most is it was like the old Yogi Berra line, deja vu all over again. Looked very much like the Vanderbilt loss last year for Alabama. And, you know, I'll include myself in the believers going into the year.
Sure.
You know, we were hearing what was coming out of Tuscaloosa, drinking the Kool-Aid, and it just wasn't there. And it's really disappointing from an Alabama perspective, the lack of physicality, lack of aggression, mistakes. They had 8 penalties for 70 yards. And, again, those were the things that were happening last year. And with Ty Simpson at quarterback, you thought this team was going to take the next step and be a contender. Now, we're not going to just throw away the whole season.
Sure.
But it was really surprising, and it makes you question what in the wide world of sports is going on in Tuscaloosa, because what we had been hearing and what we were told, we didn't see one lick of it on in that game against FSU.
I watched this back to see what went wrong. And a lot of the things you said, very, very true, right? Run game, what happened? This is supposed to be the best offensive line in college football, right? I mean, that's truthfully what it is supposed to be. And based on not just eyewitness accounts, it's based on 4 and 5 stars littered throughout it, names that should be drafted in the first or second round of the NFL draft, Parker Brailsford at center, Caden Proctor is supposed to be a top 5, top 10 pick at left tackle in the NFL draft next year. 29 carries for 74 yards against a defensive front who in the 2 deep, I checked, only has one guy over 300 pounds. That makes no sense.
None.
That's just a lack of physicality. None. That just was always apparent under Nick Saban when you had especially a group like that. Also, I know people have been pointing it out, but I watched the game back. Just a lack of a sense of urgency from a lot of guys. Backside of a play, I always remember the Nick Saban teams would have random guys just chase down plays and make something happen. Say it, touchdown saving tackles, you know. Force fumbles coming from the backside. A lot of those guys were just sort of jogging all over the field. It just, it feels like, and I don't want to completely shut the door on the season for Bama. Still a lot of talented players on that team, but it feels like there was just a standard under Nick Saban from a play-to-play standpoint that's not there right now. And then the final thing, and I heard this stat, and it blew me away. And I have to give credit to Josh Pate. He's the first one I heard it from, Josh Pate College Football Show. Now over at ESPN, doing some things with ESPN. But you brought up the penalties, right? Bunch of penalties.
Yeah.
In the Kalen DeBoer era, they have never won a penalty battle. Hmm. They have always had more penalties than the other team. Every single game, Kalen DeBoer has been the coach at Alabama.
And that's discipline. That's discipline.
And I think that ties into what I said about standard and energy and sense of urgency.
And not to pile on the coach, but this rhetorical question I heard asked over the weekend, is Kalen DeBoer Alabama's Brian Harsin?
Oh,
where he just isn't
doesn't fit. Right.
Just doesn't fit. He's a West Coast guy. Western guy, is he the fit? We shall see. Again, the big buyout is there, but I'm willing to – let's see what happens the rest of the way.
Yeah, step back for a second.
And if this trend continues, I think there would be a change because in this day and age, the hook is quicker and you can't afford to fall behind dramatically. Last year was a step back from what Alabama is traditionally used to. If that continues this year, you got to make a change. But let's see how the year plays out. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt, and we'll see. We'll make those judgments later on.
If it looks like last year, 9-3 on the outside looking into the college football playoff where you have really bad losses and good wins, sort of paired next to each other. You probably give them another year, but I have seen Alabama fans and their discussion.
Oh yeah,
and it is
ugly.
It's very ugly.
But hey, kudos to our friend Mike Norvell.
Yep,
he has rebuilt that team. Obviously, they had major issues last year. It looks like they've addressed those. So, congratulations to Mike. And Florida State and Gus Malzahn, who called a really good game. So, you know, it wasn't all Alabama, even though a lot of it was.
Yeah, but still.
Florida State.
You got to give credit where credit's due.
Absolutely.
I saw this rhetorical question thrown around, though, over the weekend. And we don't have to spend too much time on this. I didn't get you prepped for this question. But they brought up, if Gus Malzahn has a really good year as an OC – Could you get back into head coaching?
Oh, my gosh.
You're very hesitant, right? Even though if he does impress us this year, he impresses us, and he does something we didn't expect him to be able to do. But I don't think anyone has that hunger anymore. It's like we've seen it. We've seen it. You may have a good peak, but after that peak, you're going to go downhill, and it'll end in somebody out of a job looking for a new coach. But I just wanted to throw that out there.
I had not heard that.
I just wanted to throw that out there. All right, now LSU finally wins an opener.
Sure did.
There we go. Now, it was for two teams who, going into the week, were the matchup of experienced quarterbacks, experienced offenses, experienced defenses, just a lot of experience on both sides. It was really kind of an ugly game back and forth, especially offensively.
Yes. Both quarterbacks kind of, I don't want to say a mundane performance, but nothing crazy. But certainly from the LSU perspective, looking across the line at Klubnik, defense. To me, the story of the game was the LSU defense.
Yes.
Really impressive. And you got to give it to the team. You know, they were down by, what, 7 at the half, I think it was. And they finished. Now, last year, that was not always the story with LSU. And I'm sure that has been a point of emphasis through the entire offseason and through camp is this year we have got to finish. And they did against Clemson. Now, Clemson, talked about as a potential national championship team. Again, not going to write them off after this one from that perspective. But at home, it's a disappointing loss, certainly.
Yeah, and the reason that finish was emphasized so much is Brian Kelly's tired of pounding presser tables after game one when they lose. I think the thing here that you mentioned is the LSU defense.
Yeah.
And I had these thoughts in mind. Blake Baker took over as their DC last offseason. He was with Mizzou previously. And year one with Mizzou was, okay, you see the bones of the defense being created. Maybe the talent's not quite there. They're not totally used to where they're supposed to be. Year two is when it really came along. And it's year two now. That run defense?
Yes.
That's the most important thing. This was a team last year, and I forget who they played. I think it was a SWAC team or a MEAC team. It was HBCU earlier in the season last year. They gave up, I don't know, nearly 200 yards rushing to that team. They gave up. Let me get this correct.
Yeah.
Just so I have this right. 20 for 31. 20 carries for 31 yards to that Clemson offense.
Exactly.
1.6 average.
Yep.
That is the biggest difference immediately off the top.
That's number one defensive stat of that game. And overall, they only gave up 261. And the passing yards really didn't hurt them.
Yeah.
But it was that run defense. And that bodes well for them in conference play.
Yes.
Because, again, we all know, and it's tried and true, it's a little bit of a haggard statement comment, that it's a line of scrimmage game, it's a line of scrimmage conference, and they showed that. They showed that against Clemson.
All right, now a couple of SEC quarterback performances. One good, one bad.
Yeah.
Tennessee, let's go to Joey Aguilar
first. Oh, man.
Joey Aguilar, he looked pretty good against Syracuse. Now, I get Syracuse lost everybody, and they had to replace the roster. But 45-26 was the final score. 16 for 28, 247, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, ran the ball for 34 yards, limited turnovers. Right? Like, that's what he did. Does that performance, and I know it's against Syracuse, does that do anything to change your thoughts on Joey himself and the season he could have in the Josh Heupel offense?
You know, my thought about Joe going into the year and under the circumstances and everything. And again, nobody coaches up quarterbacks like Josh. And I give Josh Heupel a lot of credit. That's kind of his thing.
Right.
And,
was one once upon
expect,
a time.
And you expect that. For me, Joey is serviceable. He may not win the game for you. You just don't want him losing the game for
right.
you. And he had that reputation of throwing the ball around, turnovers. Look, if you can get this kind of game out of him every week, Tennessee's in a good spot. They ran the ball really well. You know, and going into the year, you know Tennessee's going to have a good run game. Did it by committee the other day, and that will probably be the story for the year. And then the defense.
Yeah.
Forced 2 turnovers in the ball game. So, again, if this is the recipe for Tennessee, it looks like a pretty good recipe. And it certainly made folks long forget, if they hadn't already, who was that other guy that went to the West Coast?
Right.
Oh, yeah, Nico who? Yeah.
Yeah, and one
so,
thing.
So good for Joey.
One thing I did appreciate about Joey is he spread the ball around. Even though there's questions about that wide receiver room, you have Braylon Staley with 6 targets, Chris Brazell with 8 targets, Deshaun Bishop, the starting running back, with 2, Mike Matthews had 5, and Micah Kitzelman, the tight end, had 3. Like, he was doing basically exactly what Syracuse's defense allowed him to do. And that's kind of what you ask of him. And that's what I think a lot of Tennessee fans wanted out of Nico a lot more last year. So I'm just – and I know it's Syracuse, and we don't know what they look like. We're kind of going off last year where they won 10 games and had to turn over the roster, and we assume, okay, maybe he's made some moves in the transfer portal Fran Brown has, and they're okay. But – I was impressed with that quarterback performance.
If you're a UT fan, you got to be feeling good about your football team.
I was not impressed with another performance, though. Now, granted,
I know where you're headed.
Granted, to be a first year starting quarterback and go on the road against the reigning national champs, that's hard to do. But Arch Manning, let's get into the discussion. Texas loses 14-7. Arch, final stat line, 17 for 30, 170, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. But I don't know if that really tells the story exactly. How did you feel? How did you feel about Arch?
You know, I thought that he would come out and have a bigger presence. I don't want to necessarily say swagger, but a confidence about him. And I just didn't see that in him. You saw him sitting on the sidelines, not a deer in the headlight kind of thing, but he's like, what's going on here? So less than stellar, not what we expected. You mentioned his stat line, the 170 yards throwing, most of those in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
You know, they had, what, 3, 4, I guess it was 4 turnovers on downs. So they had opportunities, just wasn't there. You know, the Texas defense played well. I mean, the Texas defense holds Ohio State to just 14. So there's one positive. And listening to Sark after the game, he's like, okay, this was just one. They still feel good about their football team. They're confident. Hey, it's a bump in the road. But they've got to coach up Arch. And he needs to come out there like the leader that we all believe he is. And, again, I stay away from the word swagger, but come out there and play with confidence. Show that in your body language.
Right.
And do what we all think he can do.
Yeah. There's just a lack of comfortability. And it happened on the first drive. Like, I could tell. He threw one. He threw a gopher ball. I don't even know how to explain it. I mean, he –
Yeah, right.
It was a nice little corner route.
Yeah,
off play action, and he just threw it short
by about
7 to 10 yards.
Yeah, you skipped it in there. Yeah.
And from that point forward, I was watching pretty skeptically because I had not really seen that from him before. And then at the end of the game, that type of sort of inaccuracy really haunts them as you get to that crucial conversion where you have Ryan Wingo schemed wide open on a drag route, and he sort of throws it sidearm.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to explain it. It almost looks like he was just unsure of himself in throwing that football and sort of floats it out there behind Ryan Wingo, drops it. Here's the turnover on downs on the way, and here's Ohio State taking over. This is not, you know, Bama losing to Florida State, okay? This is the number one team in the country losing to the reigning national champs. So I think Texas is still playoff bound. Like, I still believe in this team. But that Arch Manning performance, it was meh at best. At best.
Yeah,
and I think there were certain throws that really made you question his talent at times, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah. And, you know, going in, obviously, all the pressure was on him.
Yes.
All the talk
course.
Was about him. The other kid on the other side. you got to remember, the year after Arch, he was the number one quarterback recruit in the country.
Right.
But that never really got talked about. So everything was on Arch, and he really didn't answer the bell, unfortunately. All of us who were pulling for him. But obviously the coach, there's no panic there. He knows what he's got. He feels good about his football team. They play San Jose State this week. So that's the kind of game, from a Texas perspective, you hope they can settle him down and he can play the game and that offense can play the kind of game that you expect him to, and get that confidence
sure.
level there, that comfort level there, and where he can stand back there and do what we believe he can do.
Yeah, and here's the thing. First-year starting quarterbacks usually show inconsistency. And
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I think that's what we saw on Saturday. It's sort of a good illustration of what normal first-year quarterbacks look like. And he could bounce back against San Jose State and look great. We've seen him against competition similar.
Yep.
And he lit it up. All right, now final thing real quick before I let you roll.
Yes, sir.
Bill Belichick in North Carolina.
Whoa.
First drive, I thought they were on their way to being national champions. I mean, Gio Lopez and that offense just – straight down the field against TCU.
Well, I could tell you, listening to Coach Dykes after the game, his post game, that team certainly went in there with a chip on their shoulder, rightfully so, because it was like, well, what about us? You know?
Yeah.
And again, like the Arch story, it was all about Belichick. You knew that.
Yeah.
But
48-14 final for those who didn't see it yesterday.
North Carolina. When is basketball season start?
Right.
When's the first day of practice?
That's a great way to pivot it. That's phenomenal. I did also get a kick about this, and you may not take these shots, but I'm going to throw this out there. And depending on where you're at, you may not view this as a shot. But he put in Max Johnson last night. Good for the Johnson fan. He threw a touchdown. Now Max is older. And he's been around a while, but it's still good to see him. He's been through a lot in his college football career. But Max Johnson's 24 years of age. You know who else is 24 years of age? Jordan Hudson.
Ah.
Bill Belichick's new lady. So the quarterback that he put into the game last night is the same age as his maybe soon-to-be wife.
What a interesting point.
Thank you for putting it that way. Interesting.
Yes.
Interesting.
Thank you
point.
For noting that.
Well,
and Gabe, just to wrap things up from my side of the mics here, I was at Coach Silverfield's radio show last night. Ran into a couple of buddies of yours.
Yeah.
Chris and Chris.
The Chris's.
They listen. Now, I think they may have said the reason they listen on Mondays is because of this segment, but I don't know. But big fans of yours, buddies of yours. Had nothing but kind things to say.
Those suck-ups. Those suck-ups. Golly.
Good guys. So shout out to Chris and Chris. Enjoyed visiting with you guys last night.
I appreciate the Chris's.
Indeed.
I appreciate the Chris's. And I appreciate Harold Grader as well. Harold,
thanks
for joining. We'll do it again next week.
Indeed.
Perfect. He is Harold Grader at Harold Grader on X. He is the Associate Executive Director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl. Now, on that note, it's time to get into hour number two. And leading us off, Jeff Calkins. Stick around for that.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.